This morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Another batch of Hillary emails. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. On this Wednesday, October 12, glad you're with us, and here's what's up this hour.
WikiLeaks has exposed some emails from Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta. Hear what was being said behind the scenes about Clinton's private email server.
The flooding in North Carolina has worsened following Hurricane Matthew as rivers reach their crest.
Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump has a new strategy to close the gap with Democrat Hillary Clinton. We'll explain it.
And airlines are hoping to crack down on comfort animals being brought on board.
The service dogs nobody is complaining about. They are the ones that are specially trained at certified training centers. What the questions arise are maybe dogs that aren't trained to that degree, or all sorts of other animals. You'll see the occasional picture on Twitter. Somebody brought a turkey earlier this year onto a flight.
USA Today transportation reporter Bart Jansen on airlines frowning on animals other than service dogs. He's here in about 20 minutes. New emails released by WikiLeaks involving Hillary Clinton's political team. It shows her staff tried to manage any potential fallout over her use of a private email server by communicating with government agencies and enlisting the help of allies in Congress. The emails belong to Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta. For example, an attorney for Mrs. Clinton appeared to know the contents of a State Department document release concerning speeches by former President Bill Clinton before it was made public. Mr. Podesta didn't offer an explanation, just tried to pin blame.
Well, I think you could start by looking at the positions that Mr. Trump has taken during the course of this campaign. One more consistent with Russian foreign policy than U.S. foreign policy.
Mr. Trump, meanwhile, seized on the issue during remarks in Panama City, Florida.
Today we learned, amazingly, that the Department of Justice fed information to the Clinton campaign about the email investigation so that the campaign could be prepared to cover up her crimes. What is going on?
Mrs. Clinton's campaign was also in touch with at least two Senate Democrats, Patrick Leahy of Vermont and Dianne Feinstein of California, trying to quiet a controversy about classified email discovered in Mrs. Clinton's inbox. New strategy for Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump: try to limit Democratic voter turnout, according to the Wall Street Journal. Advisors say the campaign will try it two ways. One, renew the nationalist themes that built his base. And two, amplify his no-holds-barred attacks against Hillary Clinton. The Journal says Mr. Trump has effectively given up the conventional wisdom of trying to reach voters far outside his core of support. In an interview with Bill O'Reilly of Fox News last night, Mr. Trump went back to the issue of the media covering for Mrs. Clinton.
If Hillary Clinton didn't have the press, she'd be right now, she wouldn't be running. She would have lost immediately. But if she didn't have the press on her side, and it's a total fixed job, if she didn't have it, she'd be at 10% right now. Nobody wants her.
Mr. Trump also showed the renewed strategy on Twitter when he sent out messages attacking House Speaker Paul Ryan as a weak leader after Mr. Ryan announced he would not campaign with him. The Journal says Mr. Trump is trying to use his break with many party leaders as a lever to ramp up support among his base, which includes many voters who feel equally estranged from the party establishment. Flooding in the aftermath of Hurricane Matthew has displaced several thousand people in North Carolina. Governor Pat McCrory warned of extremely dangerous conditions in the coming days in central and eastern North Carolina. Matthew, the most powerful Atlantic storm since 07, is blamed on at least 30 deaths in Florida, Georgia, and the Carolinas. Four additional deaths, he says, were confirmed yesterday in North Carolina, raising the death toll there to 18.
We're going to do everything we can to help the people that are being impacted by this, both with federal monies, with state monies, and have good cooperation with city and county monies.
Nearly 4,000 people have taken refuge in North Carolina shelters, including about 1,200 in the hard-hit area of Lumberton, where the Lumber River crested at almost 4 feet above the prior record set in 2004 after Hurricane Francis. A 62-year-old woman named Sarah McCallum says she lost everything when flooding drove her from her home of 20 years. State officials are especially concerned about victims like her who have no flood insurance because they do not live in areas typically prone to inundation. It's 11 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Need a website? Why not do it yourself with Wix.com? No matter what business you're in, Wix.com has something for you. Used by more than 84 million people worldwide, Wix.com makes it easy to get your website live today. You need to get the word out about your business. It all starts with a stunning website. With hundreds of designer-made, customizable templates to choose from and the drag-and-drop editor, there is no coding needed. You don't need to be a programmer or designer to create something beautiful. You can do it yourself with Wix.com. Wix.com empowers business owners to create their own professional websites every day. When you're running your own business, you're bound to be busy. Too busy. Too busy worrying about your budget. Too busy scheduling appointments. Too busy to build a website for your business. And because you're too busy, it has to be easy. And that's where Wix.com comes in. With Wix.com, it's easy and free. Go to Wix.com to create your own website today. The result is stunning. Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton has opened up a considerable lead over GOP rival Donald Trump in Virginia. But a Democratic victory next month could spark a much tighter race in that battleground state next year. Wall Street Journal reporter Christina Peterson says if Mrs. Clinton's running mate becomes vice president, that'll set off a series of what could be enormously expensive and consequential races in the state to replace him. Christina, explain.
Hillary Clinton's running mate is Senator Tim Kaine, who is a Virginia Democrat in the Senate. If their ticket wins and he is elected vice president in January, then there'll be an opening in the Senate that will be filled when Virginia's governor, Democrat Terry McAuliffe, appoints a temporary replacement. So McAuliffe will appoint someone who will hold that seat until there's a special election in Virginia to fill out the remainder of Senator Kaine's term. So that special election would happen in November 2017. And then that person who wins that election would be in office just through the remainder of the following year because Senator Kaine's term currently ends in 2018.
Oh, okay.
So it sets up an appointment and then two elections, both of which could be pretty tight. Unlike at the presidential level this year, where Virginia is definitely leaning Democratic, in an off year, you see a little bit of a different electorate. During presidential years, Democrats and minority voters tend to turn out in higher numbers, and they tend to vote more Democratic. But in off years, you see more influence from the grassroots conservatives and other more base voters. So it's likely to be a tighter race in an off year.
And I guess, and I think as you point out in the story too, Governor McAuliffe, if, in fact, Senator Kaine becomes vice president, would prefer to have somebody in there who really wants to run, right, once that the unexpired term is, or once the special election is held, right? They're going to want somebody familiar in there.
Well, Democrats are saying, you know, you may want to appoint someone who could win statewide. There are sort of different types of people that he could appoint. He could appoint someone who's just a placeholder and who doesn't want to run again in 2017, or he could appoint someone who would benefit from the name recognition that would come from being appointed and give them a leg up in what could be a tight race in 2017 and 2018. And one dynamic that's interesting here is that if you have a 50-50 Senate that's evenly split between the parties, in that scenario, a President Clinton and a Vice President Kaine would have the advantage because the vice president casts the tie-breaking vote in the Senate. So even if the Senate was split 50-50, if there were Democrats in the White House, Democrats would control the Senate. But that could put a lot of pressure on that 2017 race because the majority could tilt back to Republicans if it's a 51-49 Senate and Republicans take back that seat. So in 2017, it's likely that there would be no other Senate races in the country. So that could be potentially control of the Senate coming down to a single race in a battlefield state.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Christina Peterson. She covers Capitol Hill. Her piece is called If Clinton Wins, Senate's Balance of Power Could Hang on Virginia. And that's because Virginia Senator Tim Kaine could become or would become the next vice president in a Clinton administration. So who's interested in running? We have some early names out of Virginia.
Yeah, so among sort of the short list of people that the governor could appoint to fill Senator Kaine's seat are Congressman Bobby Scott and Don Beyer, who are both currently in the House, Virginia Democrats, and the state's Attorney General, Mark Herring. There was a poll conducted late last month, and Congressman Scott drew the most support. He also probably has the most name recognition at this point just because he has been in the House for a long time and previously was in the state Senate and the state House. There's also some sort of historic resonance to appointing him. He would be the first African-American senator from the state of Virginia, and the political arm of the Congressional Black Caucus has endorsed him. So it's hard to say who would be like the front runner in an appointment because that's just going to be up to the governor, but he Congressman Scott is certainly drawing a lot of sort of chatter and speculation, and he has said that if the governor appointed him, he would run in 2017 and run in 2018.
That's Christina, Wall Street Journal reporter Christina Peterson on Capitol Hill. It's 21 minutes after the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, the shackles gone. Donald Trump is stepping up his attacks on his own party leaders, promising to teach Republicans who oppose him a lesson and to fight for the presidency the way he wants to. Trump told Fox News last night that he's tired of non-support from leaders of the party, saving special ire for House Speaker Paul Ryan.
I don't want his support. I don't care about his support. What I want to do is I want to win for the people.
With his poll numbers dropping, Trump reverted to the combative, divisive strategy that propelled him to victory in the GOP primary, attack all critics, including fellow Republicans. NBC is expected to part ways with Today Show anchor Billy Bush after the emergence of a tape in which he engaged in a lewd conversation about women with Trump. The network is said to be negotiating Bush's exit, which could be finalized in the next several days. Hillary Clinton's campaign's top advisor, John Podesta, is accusing a longtime Trump aide of getting advanced warning about WikiLeaks hacking into Podesta's private email account and publishing the information. Podesta's accusing the Trump campaign of working in conjunction with Russia.
Well, I think you could start by looking at the positions that Mr. Trump has taken during the course of this campaign. One more consistent with Russian foreign policy than U.S. foreign policy.
Trump advisor Roger Stone is calling Podesta's allegations categorically false and without foundation. Podesta says the FBI is investigating. Food, water, and building supplies are beginning to reach remote corners of Haiti as tens of thousands of people slowly rebuild their lives after a devastating Category 4 storm hit last week. Haitians helped each other regain some semblance of their pre-hurricane lives as they await the arrival of aid. And it's one of the best-known comedy routines ever, Abbott and Costello's Who's On First? And now the routine is the subject of a lawsuit making its way through the courts. Two courts have now ruled that producers of a now-closed Broadway play can use the bit over objections by the comedy duo's heirs, saying it's so common that it can be viewed as fair use of a copyrighted work.
Really?
Sounds like that happy birthday
Ooh,
thing.
Yes, right, right. Good example. Did you ever see the photo that kind of makes its way around every now and then on like Facebook where it's a guy named Who?
Is
an Asian player, apparently, with the last name H-U.
Oh, no.
And he's on first base in some sort of... I don't know if it's made up or not. I can never tell. But Who is on first?
That's cute.
23 minutes now after the hour. Thanks for spending time with us. The definition of what qualifies as a comfort pet on an airplane seems to have unofficially expanded, and airlines aren't happy about it. There's a suspicion that some travelers are sneaking pets aboard planes in the guise of comfort animals to avoid paying fees. No! USA Today transportation reporter Bart Jansen says airlines would like to limit the animals traveling in plane cabins to just trained service dogs, such as those for the blind and deaf, and keep out, you know, monkeys and pigs. Bart, what's going on?
Well, there's a Transportation Department committee that's taking a look at whether they should change the definition of which animals are allowed to ride with passengers in the cabin of airplanes. For about the last 20 years, you've been able to bring almost any animal you want to as a an emotional support animal. And they say, well, if you've got a letter from your doctor saying you need the animal, that you can bring him along so long as he's leashed. And so now that's maybe they're thinking that's too many, and so they're looking at perhaps restricting the definition.
Wow. What types of animals are people bringing on other than, say, the, you know, the standard service dogs we're all familiar with?
Right. The service dogs, nobody is complaining about. They, the ones that are specially trained at certified training centers to be like the eyes or ears for disabled travelers, nobody's disputing them. What the questions arise are maybe dogs that aren't trained to that degree, or all sorts of other animals. You'll see the occasional picture on Twitter. Somebody brought a turkey earlier this year onto a flight. My story features a guy who likes to bring a little marmoset, a type of monkey, with him on flights to calm him down. Gizmo is his name. And a doctor videotaped a pig getting on a Delta flight with her earlier this year. So it can be quite a variety of animals at this point.
Goodness. So all you need is a doctor's note.
Yeah. A mental health professional signing a note within the last calendar year or the last year before the flight. And you're supposed to let the airline know ahead of time.
Oh, okay.
So that they can prepare. If there were technical concerns about the animal, there might be a fuss. But basically, if you have a doctor's note certifying that you have a mental issue, then, yeah, you can bring the animal along. It's supposed to be on a leash so that they don't get loose in the cabin. And, like I say, this includes cats, monkeys, pigs. One of our readers saw an iguana on one flight.
Wow.
So, yeah, quite a variety.
Thanks, Bart. USA Today transportation reporter Bart Jansen. 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Whether traveling or working remotely, we know your PC is your business headquarters. And when work takes you on the go, you need a laptop that can keep up. Dell's XPS 13 empowers small business owners to collaborate anywhere with incredible battery life and powerful performance. Reduce downtime by 50% and boost productivity with 4 times faster performance when you refresh to new Dell PCs featuring Intel Core processors. Explore the XPS 13 at Dell.com/radio.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday, October 12. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines, new leaked emails from the Clinton campaign. Flooding remains a danger in North Carolina. The New York Times says complaints about fake accounts at Wells Fargo have been around for 11 years. National anthem kneeler and 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick will start this Sunday. Baseball, Cubs knock out the Giants. Nats and Dodgers headed to Game 5 tomorrow. TripAdvisor will no longer sell tickets to animal attractions like swims with dolphins. And a fifth grader's most excellent love note. That story in about 20 minutes. You might know somebody in this position. If you were a white kid who went to work straight out of high school around 1975, you earned about $44,000 two decades later. But by 2014, on average, your pay had fallen to $32,000 a year, a stunning 27% decline in real terms after accounting for inflation. You spent what were supposed to be your peak earning years, your 40s and 50s, falling behind. Yahoo Finance writer Rick Newman says, "These are many of the folks that GOP presidential nominee Donald Trump appeals to, older white guys with less than a college education getting squeezed by the twin forces of globalization and digitization." Rick, what have you looked at?
Well, we know this is a big issue in the presidential campaign. Donald Trump in particular has been talking about mostly the demise of good-paying manufacturing jobs. So some researchers at a group called Sentier Research decided to look into this further and figure out what exactly has happened with manufacturing workers, and they just selected one demographic group, which is white men, and then they separated them into college-educated and people who only have a high school degree, and they looked at income for each group at 3 points in time, 1978, 1996, and 2014, and there's some striking outcomes here. Basically, The most surprising thing is incomes for older white workers who only have a high school degree is down by double digits between 1996 and 2014. So it's broken out by very small age groups, such as 37 to 38-year-olds, 39 to 40-year-olds. But this is basically saying, just to pull out one example here, that a worker who was 37 or 38 years old in 1996 earned about $44,000 a year on average, and that as that person got older, that person ended up earning only about $32,000 by 2014. Just a huge drop in income.
Goodness, and that's from what? Those wages stagnant and cost of living just eating into that?
We don't know. So this doesn't tell you why this has happened. I mean, we know anecdotally a lot of things that have happened between those two data points, 1996 and 2014. We know companies have done a lot of offshoring of these jobs. We know that China entered the World Trade Organization in 2001 and became a huge destination for any company anywhere in the world that wanted to manufacture stuff cheaply. We know the digital revolution has sort of taken place over that period of time. So without being able to say specifically what's the cause here, I mean, clearly, these things are all factors. Globalization is a factor. Digitization is a factor. The automation of a lot of jobs that humans used to do is a factor. And it really is hurting people in this demographic.
We're speaking with Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman. His piece is called Older White Workers Without a College Degree Have Really Gotten Torched. One line you wrote in the story I want to ask about, too. You said politicians love to talk up the need for job retraining, and the government does offer safety net programs, but what about those? But temporary fixes not good enough?
They're not getting the job done. I mean, this data tells you that the programs we do have, and they are fairly extensive, they're not solving the problem. That's basically what it tells you. So where this leads is, well, what are we supposed to do about this? It's not a simple answer, but I think you start by saying the things we do have on the books are just not working. So we need other solutions to this problem. Now, that's where it gets tricky, because Trump says the solution is we need to bring back the jobs, and he would impose tariffs on imports and, you know, be willing to start trade wars in order to, quote, bring back the jobs. And a lot of economists say that's not what's going to happen. If you impose those tariffs and you do start trade wars, well, we're going to have a recession. And guess who's going to get hurt worse by the recession are the people you're actually trying to help. And, you know, I think the sort of middle of the road answer is we need better programs. I don't think the answer is you close the door on free trade. I think the answer is you address this problem directly, and you say, what are some of the things the country can do to help people who are stuck in this predicament?
Thanks, Rick. Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman in New York. Reminder, by the way, that we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. If you like cynicism and sarcasm, you can follow me directly @GordonDeal. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, despite being one of the most famous people on the planet, LeBron James is apparently not above picking up his teammates' laundry, though he's not thrilled about it. Cleveland.com reports that after a preseason game this past weekend, James and Cavs point guard Kyrie Irving were the last two players left to talk to reporters in the locker room. While Irving fielded questions, James picked up laundry bags left behind by his absent teammates. The site says that James has always been a stickler for respecting locker room attendance, so the behavior he showed Saturday night is no surprise. However, it doesn't mean that the four-time MVP wants a second job playing housekeeper, promising to address the laundry littering with the Cavs, saying, quote, "Hopefully I only have to say something once. Can't leave the locker room looking like that."
Ew. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I want to be part of a meeting that LeBron James has called to speak to everyone in the locker room.
Because he wears many hats. I mean, sometimes people call him the GM of the team. I mean, mean he's sending you off somewhere. I mean, there's really nothing with the Cavs that James is not involved in some way, shape, or form.
Makes you wonder, though, what his house looks like.
Oh, yeah.
If he's this interested in cleaning up after, you know, his teammates in the locker room.
Yeah, immaculate.
You might imagine that his house is pretty clean, too.
You would think. And despite all the stories this past year, Gordon, about people hacking into electronic road signs, it still seems to be incredibly easy for passersby to make these signs say anything they want, even if the message is indifference. The latest incident comes from Cincinnati, where an electronic sign baffled drivers with a mysterious and apparently fed-up message reading, blah, 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 blah. That's six blahs, by the way, for those keeping score at home. The Ohio Department of Transportation said it was unaware of the message's origins, but overhead signs on nearby highways appeared to be unaffected. It's not known what the message was displayed on the sign before the blah blah showed up, so this message would seem to be as good as any other. Electronic instruction signs are frequently targeted by hackers these days, who reprogram them with occasionally humorous messages, including warnings about attacks from zombies, angry gorillas, Godzilla, and even Donald Trump.
Well, to be honest, we do need to be aware of attacks from zombies.
I mean, sure.
So that's good use of road signs.
Right.
You know, I was thinking about, though, on a serious note, if you were to type something on a road sign that required people to slow down significantly,
yeah,
or it was shocking and it caused an accident of some
yes.
kind.
Well, that's the worry here.
Right. Could you face criminal charges
yeah.
if you were caught?
I'm sure you could
like
be. I mean, and it seems like in this particular incident, it's funny because the obviously the message here was blah, 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 a lot of indifference.
Yeah.
It seems like the folks in Cincinnati, the officials, were kind of indifferent to the whole situation. Like, I guess this was left going for like days upon end. They're like, oh, we don't know who did it. We're just kind of leave it. Mm. We don't even know what the message was before. Kind of, you know, shrugging their shoulders. But like you said, you could really cause an accident with something like this.
Let's change the password from password 1234 to something else.
Yes.
So it's not hacked. Right. Thank you, Mike. It's 14 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
In business, risks and rewards come with every decision, like moving to the cloud with Office 365. While its benefits include anywhere access and lower costs, cyber threats and user errors can quickly wipe out data and the money you save. Barracuda Essentials for Office 365 provide an added layer of security and functionality for threat protection, email migration, data recovery, and quality of service. Move securely to Office 365. Visit barracuda.com/essentials to learn more.
Time now for a technology update, and it's brought to you by Dell. Check out Dell's new XPS 13 laptop, featuring incredible battery life and performance that's four times faster. Learn more at dell.com/radio. By now, you've heard that Samsung is permanently discontinuing its newest smartphone, the Galaxy Note 7. What do? If you have one, first off, it's not safe to still be using it. It could overheat or catch fire. Secondly, you might be wondering, are other Samsung phones causing problems? No, this is only about the Note 7. The Wall Street Journal says it is still generally considered safe to use the slightly smaller Galaxy S7 Edge or the standard Galaxy S7. If you bought your Note 7 from a carrier, they'll settle up with you, either with a refund or an exchange. Even accessories can be returned. And if you purchase your phone from a carrier's website, you can get your refund or exchange in store if you prefer. 8 minutes now in front of the hour. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
According to flooding in the aftermath of Hurricane Matthew has displaced several thousand people in North Carolina, and authorities are helping more evacuate as swollen rivers threatened a wide portion of the state. Governor Pat McCrory warned of extremely dangerous conditions in the coming days in central and eastern North Carolina, where several rivers are at record or near record levels.
We're going to do everything we can to help the people that are being impacted by this. Both with federal monies, with state monies, and have good cooperation with city and county monies.
Matthew killed at least 1,000 people in Haiti and 30 in Florida, Georgia, and the Carolinas. The Supreme Court says it will decide whether Muslims, Arabs, and other immigrants rounded up immediately after the September 11, 2001 attacks can sue former Attorney General John Ashcroft and other officials for violating their civil rights. The court will also rule on whether the parents of a Mexican teenager killed by a U.S. agent who fired across the international border into Mexico can sue over his death. Both cases test the broad immunity federal officials generally enjoy from lawsuits for their official actions. According to a newly released toxicology report, Terrence Crutcher, whose shooting by a police officer in Tulsa was captured on camera, had the drug known as PCP in his system during the incident. The case drew national attention after police released video showing Crutcher walking on the road with his arms in the air before the shooting. Lawyers for the only surviving suspect in last November's attack in Paris say they will no longer defend him. The pair say they've decided to stop representing Salam Abdeslam because he has chosen to remain silent in protest against the 24-hour video surveillance of his prison cell. And when it comes to healthy, happy residents, big cities win out over small communities, largely because of sidewalks, parks, and good public transit. According to a new report from Gallup and HealthWays, the top cities include Boston, San San Francisco, Chicago, New York, and Washington. The report found that residents in these cities have significantly lower rates of smoking, obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and depression compared with those in the lowest ranked communities, which include Tulsa, Durham, Indianapolis, Oklahoma City, and Fort Wayne.
Oh, all right. Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. Well, a fifth grader has written an elaborate love note that's gone viral. A photo of the message was shared to Reddit. UPI picked up the story. The note read, "My niece is in fifth grade and got her first love note, and this fifth grader has more game than I'll ever have." The letter addressed to the poster's niece, Abby, begins with the young student pouring out his feelings. It went like this: "Your eyes remind me of the evening sky." The student went on to express how he appreciated Abby's shared love of video games. He wrote, "My heart felt like broken glass until I saw you, and then I felt like I had every Pokemon ever." And here's where he really sold it. Again, fifth grader. He says, "I love how you play Zelda, even when people think it's weird. And if you liked me, it would be my first ever victory." Man, that kid is working it. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.
Thanks for listening, and we'd love to hear from you. Leave a review and comment for us on iTunes. For more from This Morning Show, check us out at thismorningwithgordondeal.com.